This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
Welcome to another episode of Lunch with a Healer. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Hoffman. Kathy White developed her joint renewal system when she turned 50, and despite teaching yoga for over 20 years, her joints were aching, her menopausal symptoms were raging, and she was not gaining any benefit from her practice anymore. She retrained in the Kyute method and has now refined it into a jointful yoga for active men and women over 50 who want to keep on doing the sports and activities they love. It's kind of like adding WD-40 to your joints. Kathy offers a unique and mindful approach to body and mind that rejuvenates the body, calms the nervous system, and builds strength and vitality as people age. I'm always looking for ways to improve our quality of life, and this just might be a welcome addition. So now, let's learn about jointful yoga with Kathy.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
My guest today, Kathy White, has said, "I want to leave a legacy of people living freely in their bodies, that people understand that their mindset is often the place that's stuck. I want to help people to be open to learn new movements and new ways to approach restrictions, tightness, stiffness, and pain in the body with mindfulness and kindness, that a sustainable yoga practice starts today and lasts for life." And welcome, Kathy, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan.
I'm very excited about this conversation because I'm one of those inflexible people that I'm sure you deal with a lot, and perhaps the reason you created this, jointful yoga. And we're going to talk all about your joint renewal system. But first, take me through your journey to the creation of jointful yoga.
Well, you know, we could give you the long version or the short version. Let's go for the short one because I know
sounds good.
We don't want to spend hours on it. But short version is I came across yoga in my 20s and loved it. It was in the 80s. It was a far cry from what was all the fashion, you know, those hot, sweaty aerobics classes and everyone wearing their tight lycra. And I would just kind of go to these classes, come out looking like a beetroot and go, nah, not for me. So I discovered yoga and loved it and continued and did my yoga teacher training and then worked with other teachers, did a bit more training and basically taught for many, many years. And yoga was a powerful healer for me. I had the really sad, unfortunate, tragic event of losing a child. He died at birth, my first child. And it was yoga that really helped restore me after that. You know, it was yoga that brought me back into my body. And then fast forward, you know, then I had two subsequent children, and actually my doula, my birth assistant for my second child was actually my yoga teacher at the time. That was how important, you know, yoga really helped me in my life experience. And then I started the menopause, the perimenopause. I started to go through the change and my joints started to seize up and I had a really bad knee and then it would go to my back and then my shoulders. I was like, oh, really stiff in my shoulders. And quite frankly, Susan, I was embarrassed because there I was with all these years of yoga behind me. And I kind of just hid it. I mean, I do remember having a conversation with my yoga teacher at the time saying, you know, what about my knee and this? And you know, she gave me some tips or something to be aware of, which kind of helped, but didn't really. And other than that, I kept it really quiet to myself that I was like in this aching, aging body because I was convinced that yoga should be helping and it wasn't. And I almost gave up yoga. I was like, okay, back to the drawing board or, we find something else to do. So I kind of went quiet for a while, and then we went on a trip for, it was when we were thinking about making the move to Canada around 2017. We took the kids out of school and went on this 3-month trip. And I had a break from yoga. I hadn't been teaching, hadn't been doing anything with yoga. And I started with wild abandon, I should say, practicing. Because I just thought, what the hell? I'm going to go to this class, that class. And because we were traveling, every city in every town has a yoga studio these days.
Right.
And so I was just a kind of yoga junkie. I didn't care. I was just in this, going to do yoga. What the heck? So I went through this period of trying every single type of yoga. And none of it really helped these stiff, aching joints. But I thought, I'll just keep doing it anyway. And I'm experimenting. And I was really seeking. I was seeking something in my body. I was seeking to sort something out and kind of free, because I was in that mode of travel.
Right.
That sort of helped. And then it wasn't until I came home that I was following a teacher online. And they were offering a meditation retreat, and they had a yoga teacher offer yoga in the mornings as part of this retreat. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to do the yoga as well. I mean, I'd signed up for the meditation part. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the yoga as well. And the first class, I tell you, I was like, what was that? What just happened? And it was this combination, this teacher, because she was also in this meditation retreat, there was so much mindfulness, so much awareness, so much presence in how she was inviting us to move our body, that everything in me stilled and slowed down. And I finally started to see that it was through my mindful inquiry, through my curiosity and my awareness, that I was going to find any way through these aching joints. I'd been approaching yoga as the way that most people kind of approach yoga, with this, if I do more, it will get better. If I do it harder, it will get better. If I hold longer, it will get better. If I
right.
just this bigger, better, faster, more mentality that we have in the West.
Right. Okay.
And this was entirely different.
So was this what you talk about, the Kaiut method? Is it K-A-I-U-T? You write about
yes.
that in your...
Yeah.
Okay. And it's...
So this teacher was teaching the Kaiut method. And so then I researched, and then I, within a few weeks, I signed up for the Kaiut teacher training. It was like this light bulb just went on. This is it. This is what I've been seeking. This is what I need.
And your joints felt better.
And my joints immediately felt better. Yeah.
Okay. I always thought that yoga was a very mindful practice to start with. But what you're telling me is that most people go in and it's not truly mindful. They're more focused on doing than being. Is that kind of what you're saying?
I think that, yes, in a way. And, you know, I don't want to dismiss, you know, there may be yoga teachers listening. There may be people who go to really mindful yoga classes. I would say it exists. But as a whole, the yoga industry in the West, the yoga field, the way that we've adapted it is we've got into our heads, oh, yoga means moving the body. So let's move the body and then let's do a bit of mindfulness and breathing around that. Rather than, oh, we're aware of the mind, we're aware of what's happening in here, and now we're going to move the body.
Your yoga is called Jointful Yoga. Is it exactly the same as the Kaiut method, or have you adapted it?
I would say what I've added is much more mindfulness. Like, I think, you know, Mr. Kaiut, who developed the system, he has, you know, huge amount of mindfulness in the practice, of course. And he has a chiropractic background. He studied chiropractic. He studied polarity therapy, which is similar to kind of craniosacral. So he brings in all these different threads. So I think what I add is my previous experience of yoga included the Scaravelli method, which is beautiful. And it's all about finding harmony in the body. And I think I add that, and also a much clearer awareness of the spine, which also comes from the Scaravelli. So I add that. Plus, I have, you know, 30 years of meditation experience, retreats, teachers. I'm a very strong follower of Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Vietnamese Zen master who passed away earlier this year. But I follow his teachings still, listen to his junior monks now give their Dharma talks. And all of that informs how I teach. So it gives the spaciousness, the present moment awareness, the breath in a different kind of way.
Very interesting. But it is still yoga. You're still moving. You're still having postures. That's all the same?
That's all the same. And what I would say, you know, because I've had students come to me and they walk out and they go, that wasn't yoga. Because what we do is we're building the foundations of each pose. So we're going back to the ankles, and we might have our legs up the wall and just be flexing our ankles or pointing our toes and do that for 5-10 minutes. And people are like, well, when am I going to do my fancy pretzel pose? You know, right. I love doing my fancy pretzel pose because it's very egoic. You know, it's like, oh, I did yoga today. But it's a terrible tragedy that people are getting injured in yoga. And the reason why people become injured is because they're trying to do those fancy pretzel poses and they don't have the foundational strength or mobility in their joints to even attempt those poses. So what I'm doing is stripping it right back to the very basics and building the foundation. So we're doing, you know, arms behind the shoulders, we're raising our arms up, we're just leaving them behind our shoulders. And so many people can't even do that.
That's not easy.
Yeah.
I something as simple as that.
Yeah. And so, you know, what I do is, okay, foundational pose, you just take your arms out to the side. As you're lying on your back, just take your arms out to the side. And even for some students, you know, I have one at the moment who has a shoulder issue going on. She only has one arm out to the side because the other arm needs to be down beside her leg, because beside her ribs, because it's so sore and painful. So being able to adapt and not make that wrong, you know, these beautiful bodies that we've been gifted, we've just moved them and used them. And you know, and we, when we come to a certain age, we suddenly start to realize like, oh, this body needs maybe a little bit more care or attention. And that's the moment to really change and give it.
You're focusing more on the joints than traditional yoga. Why is focusing on the joints so important?
Yeah, well, because when yoga is seen, as I say, it's seen as a kind of fitness thing, moving the body. So when people see them doing that, they look at it and go, oh, look, they're stretching. And so stretching becomes this thing that you do in yoga and this effort. So if you're doing, imagine doing a forward bend and, you know, for some people, they can't touch their toes. That's fine. So if you can't touch your toes, you can't touch the floor, you bring the floor up. So you add a pillow, a cushion, a chair, a stool, however high you need. My 91-year-old dad practices on Zoom with me and he has a chair. So his forward bend is he just touches the chair. And sometimes he's very stiff. So he even turns the chair around. He's not touching the seat of the chair. He's touching right. the back of the chair. You know, that's enough. Right. That's enough. And so when people see those movements, they go, oh, right, so I've really got to stretch here to get down. Well, no, what I'm encouraging students to do is feel their feet, feel their ankles, stack their joints one on top of the other. So ankles, knees, and hips are all stacked. So you've got your joints all in alignment. And then you're noticing how the spine curves. You're feeling the vertebrae, the joints in the spine. You're feeling the vertebrae coming down. And so that whole awareness, and if you feel a stretchy feeling on the back of your legs, most people think, oh, that's what I'm going for, and they'll try and get more of it. What I say is, if you feel a stretchy feeling on your back of your legs, back off.
Oh,
come
really?
Away from that and have your awareness in your joints. What's going on in your ankles, your knees, your hips, your spine? What's happening in your pelvis? And just keeping prompting, cueing the students to keep their awareness in the joints. So when I say we don't stretch, it's not exactly true. I kind of say it's the no stretch method. We Right. are stretching. However, it's not the priority. It's the consequence of moving the body. But we're not trying to stretch the body. Because if you stretch, if you think about it, it's like, okay, I've got a stiff joint. Imagine you've got a stiff hip. And then you just keep stretching, stretching, stretching the hamstrings. But the hip is still stiff. That's going to lead to injury. It doesn't help having loose muscles if you have stiff joints.
And by focusing on the joints, as you say, because of that focus, does your body then naturally actually stretch more?
I would say, yeah, I wouldn't say it stretches more, as in it has more mobility.
I was just going to correct that. Yes,
yeah.
Mobility.
So it has more mobility or more suppleness because the joints. Because once it's like the joints are the key. If you start there, if you make them the foundation, the joints themselves will inform the muscles
right.
how they want the muscles to behave. So it's like the joint goes, I'm really stiff. I don't need much muscle movement. So you have a stiff muscle. The joint starts to open and it goes, okay, muscles, ligaments and tendons as well. Okay, you guys, I need you to be able to help me move in all these different directions because I can do so. And so the muscle, you know, so I mean, that's a very simplistic view of it, but that's basically how we're using it in terms of making the joints the foundation of the practice.
Makes perfect sense, actually. It really does.
I would say that I can feel in my own body, my hips were really not in a good shape when I started this particular practice 5 years ago. And I went through a period, even during the practice, 2 years in, where one hip, as soon as I drove for more than an hour or two, one hip would be out for a couple of days. You know, I could just feel it clunking, just making this weird, weird noise. And just last night, I went dancing. I love to dance five rhythms. And I went dancing and I was moving around and I had this memory. I'd completely forgotten. Oh, my left hip. There's nothing wrong with it. It's doing all the moves I want to move. I'm not having to protect it. I'm not having to hold it. I'm not having to do anything different. And that's from a regular yoga practice.
That's interesting. So that's why you call this like a WD-40 for your joints.
Yeah.
Okay. Most of your clients, are they on Zoom or are they in your studio?
I do both. With the pandemic, I had to pivot. Everything went on Zoom, of course.
So can people get injured doing your yoga?
I would say it's quite hard to injure yourself with this practice because we're doing the foundations of yoga. We're not doing fancy poses. And of course, you know, if someone's a real A-type personality and right. wants to push themselves and go hard, 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 but as much as possible, I'm cueing people to back off, to be conservative, to really, what I talk about is finding that first layer of restriction. So imagine you're sitting cross-legged and we do a what's called Sukhasana, easy pose, just sitting right. on a cushion, you've got your legs crossed. And it's a slightly different cross of the legs because we bring our feet forward rather than have them. Usually when people cross their legs, they tuck their feet towards their hips and tuck them under the cushion or near the cushion. What I ask is for people to move their legs forward, because that gets a very different angle into the hip, and you really start to feel your hip restrictions then. And so for some people, just sitting in that pose right from the get-go, they'll be feeling their hips. And I'll say, if you're feeling sensations at this point, just stay there. Just stay there. Stay there and experience what you experience. For those of you who are not feeling anything, just drop your head. And then people will drop their head and they'll start feeling something. And then people who are feeling fairly mobile today, then bring your torso forward. So we're doing a forward flexion on the crossed legs. So there's always stages of movement. And as I teach, you know, I always say, I try and teach, if I've got 12 people in the studio, or, you know, five people in studio, five people on Zoom, whatever it is, I'm teaching those 10 classes. I'm teaching 10 classes. I'm not teaching one. Okay. Because I'm looking at each student, modifying, adapting, making sure that my cueing covers every single student in the room.
Okay. So, you know, it's counterintuitive to what you would think you should be getting from yoga, which, as you say, is the stretching element. Because I'm thinking about, if I'm doing downward dog pose, for instance, and I'm feeling extreme pulling on the back of my legs, and you're supposed to get your feet flat on the floor, which I've never been able to do. But you would be actually saying, oh, if you're feeling something, stop, rather than push.
Yeah. So one, in the Kyute method, we don't do downward dog. It's way too complicated a pose. There's so much going on. If you think about the pressure on your wrists, the transference to your shoulders, how the spine is moving, what's happening in the pelvis. I mean, when I say we don't do it, if there's a student comes in and says, you know, how would I do a downward dog at home? I'll coach them through it, but it's a very different approach. And what's happening, why you can't get your feet on the ground, is because your ankles are stiff. And so what most people in yoga would do, would they try and stretch out the backs of their legs to get their ankles on the ground, and more stretching without addressing the fact that the ankles are stiff.
Okay.
So we're going to go back to the beginnings, and we're going to have you put your legs up the wall, so the whole of your body and system is relaxed, because that's another really important part of healing, is to be in rest and restore mode.
Right.
Legs up the wall, and we're going to get you to really work your ankles. 4 months, start to feel those ankles open. And then that stretchy feeling at the back of your leg is going to disappear.
Amazing. So how long are your yoga practices? Like how is it, like a 45-minute session? What are these sessions like?
Yeah, it's an hour. And of that, we're probably practicing, maybe doing the mindful movement, the jointful yoga, for 50 minutes. Because we have a 5-minute opening, often with legs up the wall, and then we have a 5-minute close in Shavasana, lying on the floor. And those are adaptable too. And I do a chair version. I'm just starting to kind of develop a chair version for people who find difficulty getting up and down off the ground. However, that said, my dad couldn't get up and down off the ground very easily. And now, because he started with me during the pandemic, because I went on Zoom so he could join from the UK, he gets up and down off the ground fine. I mean, it takes him time. He's 91. Right. You know, give him a break, but he'll be 92 in December. It's he manages it, and that's through the regular practice of yoga.
So really, young people should be doing this as well as people of a certain age, because it sounds like it's going to prevent a lot of injuries.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the problem with young people is that they are so, they're fit and athletic, and they think they're doing great work because they're going for their power runs and their, you know, playing their tennis and doing their activities, skiing down mountains. The problem with all those fitness things is not what you're doing. What you're doing is brilliant. Absolutely. Get out there, get moving. Fantastic. But it's also what you're not doing. It's what you're not doing with your joints that has the impact over the years. So if you think about, oh, I'm playing tennis, there's actually a very limited range of movements that you're doing in tennis. There's a very repetitive thing, a golf swing, for example, how you're moving the spine, how you're twisting the body. There's very limited range of movement. So what a yoga practice does, and the whole series and sequence over time, is that we touch into every single joint from all the different angles that that joint can move. We're exploring, we're investigating, we're opening all the way through the body.
This practice can only improve your sports, because exactly, it will improve your range of movement. It will improve your tennis. It will improve your golf. Everything you do, it's just, it has to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not like, don't give those things up. No, come to yoga so that you can continue to do these things, yeah, especially as you age.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm a very active person, and the one thing I've never done my entire life is stretch. It's just the one thing I've always hated to do. And I tried yoga and it was okay, but it didn't really, as you say, it didn't really change anything. And the one thing I believe you need to focus on is the one thing that you don't want to do. In my case, it's loosening up my joints and increasing my mobility, particularly as I am getting older. This sounds perfect, but you do recommend, on top of your yoga, other forms of exercise, like strength training. Do you do strength training?
I don't myself, because I find the yoga is plenty. In terms of the strength I build, it's built slightly differently. You know, it's not kind of weights or whatever, but there is some kind of weight bearing activities. And yeah, it does build strength, but more subtly and over time. And I walk. I love to hike, and that's my right, go-to. And then my husband and I love to cycle. Right. We just got e-bikes, and that's another thing I do. And those activities, you know, I see them as just enjoyments,
right?
Not as fitness or whatever. And it's the same with the yoga, really. I see it as a total joy in my life. It's like, I want to get on my mat. I want that. And if I miss a day, I'm kind of hungry for it the next day, because it's such a beautiful practice to be in your body, exploring mindfully, smiling at everything you find, and being kind to yourself.
Have you had some of your clients say that their sleep has improved?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, it really affects the whole nervous system. Is completely transformed by this way of working, because instead of, you know, all those sports and fitness activities, most of them rely on a little adrenaline push, you know, let's go. And even the slower ones, even like golf, you know, there's that moment of standing on the tee, you know, teeing off, and you're like, well, okay, you know, deep breath, all right, gonna go. And there's the whack of the ball, you know, that there's something quite enlivening about it, which is alert, but there's no rest. So what our bodies need for rest, and this is why all this amazing sleep research is coming out at the moment, is that that's the mode that we restore. That's when our digestive system is able to take in the nutrients. That's when our repair system repairs the cells. That's when our mind becomes calm. The whole body restores itself in rest. So to have a practice that is actually restful, even as you're moving your body, it gives you an opportunity to understand that I don't have to be busy, going at it all day. I can walk restfully. I can have a digestive walk. I can do the dishes mindfully.
Right.
And that can be a period of rest for me as well. So we're building in this practice of yoga helps you build in those other periods of rest that are possible throughout your life. So your whole nervous system can calm down, which is so needed in today's world.
You're not kidding. Decreasing the cortisol,
yeah,
release from the stress,
yeah,
would be a huge positive. Do you recommend a certain time of day because it is a quieting modality? Do you tell people they should do this before they go to bed or first thing in the morning? It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. What I say more than anything is make it a habit.
Okay.
That's the, you know, make it, if you can, make it a daily habit. Like in my membership site, I've got to do some more actually, but I started doing the daily 15 little short videos of 15 minute practices because people were saying to me, I can't always find an hour and it feels weird to do one of your classes, which I have 100 or more recordings of classes. If they do, you know, just half an hour of a class, or if they do just 15 minutes of the class, it feels weird to switch it off and then walk away. It's like, oh, I didn't finish it. You know, there's a sense of no completion to that.
Right.
So what I created was, you know, these are complete. This is a 15-minute practice and people are loving it, absolutely yeah. loving it. I would really encourage anyone thinking about doing some yoga is think about something a bit shorter, but daily, rather than try and do a big 90-minute or two-hour practice, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks or something.
Okay. So someone listening to this is very intrigued and wants to start. They're like me, very inflexible, but knows this is exactly what I need. I researched your website. You can do classes where you are actually monitoring, as you said, the students. Or can I just get the videos, the online videos you have, and learn by myself?
I would suggest tune in. If you're the kind of person who is easily self-motivated and will trust yourself to follow videos online and you don't feel you need the coaching of live classes, then the membership is absolutely super. And even in membership, you do get once a month for 10 months of the year, you get one class a month that you can join live on Zoom. So that's for the people who are self-motivated, self-learners, who are happy to do things on their own. They want more flexibility in their schedule. Perfect. For those who need a little bit more coaching, who want some more support, who want me to keep looking at their body and adapting and checking and making sure they're doing the postures right, I would suggest join me on Zoom classes.
Okay.
Or if you're on Vancouver Island, come to my studio.
That sounds very inviting. It's a beautiful place to visit. That's for
it
sure.
It is for there. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Okay. I mean, this, it's not a new thing, but it's not a well-known form of yoga. Would you agree?
It's not a new thing. And it's so ancient that we've adapted it, changed it, and it's lost its roots. You know, that's what I feel is like, let's get back to the roots of yoga. What was yoga all about? It was about creating a mindfulness and meditation practice for the body, within the body, to okay. move the body mindfully and be very present.
Do you do any of the original yoga, the regular yoga that you used to do?
You know, I was just doing a downward dog yesterday. I do. I teach a kids yoga class and they, you know, we do lots of fun right. poses, but we hold them for like a nanosecond and they're wobbly and falling over and laughing their heads off. And it's just a really fun class. So yes, I do some kind of traditional poses with the kids. And I notice in my body, they feel fun. You know, okay. and this is coming back to them. They feel fun. They feel light. They feel fun. And I'm approaching them with a very different understanding of my body now.
Okay.
Whether I would go back to actually doing a practice with those kind of poses, that might be a few years hence still.
Have you investigated other areas of these type of modalities like Qigong or Tai Chi?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I used to, during the pandemic, I was doing an online Qigong class, and that's really helping me develop my chair yoga, which I haven't sort of launched. I'm just doing locally at the moment, but I will launch in terms of videos and putting chair yoga onto my membership too. But at the moment, the Qigong is really helping to inform what's happening on the chair.
Do you have anybody who comes in with a really common injury now is the psoas ileactus muscle area? Do you have people that come in and say this part, it's not their hip, it's around the hip, but it's actually the musculature?
So when people come to me with injury or, you know, trauma or whatever it is, history, disease, illness, accidents, I tend not to, and this is not a way of being unkind, I just tend not to try and pay too much attention to it. I listen, I want to know if you've got a shoulder injury. It's like, blah, great. It's something happening in the psoas region. Yeah, okay, great, got it. So I'm storing that data. However, I am more interested in watching how they move, where their limitations are, where they find that the sensation grows, where they find ease, and just letting them move in their body through all the poses, that in itself is healing and restorative. We don't need to address a particular area of the body, because that's a very mechanistic, simplistic view of, you know, because maybe that region of the psoas has become traumatized or whatever, injured because of something in the thoracic spine, of something in the back of the neck and around the occiput. There could be a variety of different reasons. We don't know where it comes from. We don't know what hereditary patterns. We don't know what they did when they were 5 years old and they fell out of a tree. You know, all those things stack in the body. So it's very difficult to say, oh, you've got that, you need to do this. Sure, if I know a student for a couple of years and I'm seeing them struggle with something, I might prescribe something because I really know them really well. I know their body very well. I've seen them move over time. Then I might feel a bit more confident to do that. But my confidence rests in the practice itself, that it's so holistic that it really addresses everything that you need to do to stay healthy.
Well, I would like to know what a daily non-negotiable for Kathy is, other than your yoga.
What's a daily non-negotiable? I would like to say, I was going to say my daily walk, but no, I skip that. That is negotiable. I can skip that. So I was going to say my coffee. I was like, no, I my decaf coffee. No, I skip that sometimes. I would say a smile. I have to have a smile every day. Even if I love Thich Nhat Hanh, my Zen master teacher from Plum Village, who used to say, breathing in, I know that I'm breathing in. I'm breathing out, I smile.
I love that answer. Where can my listeners find you?
They can find me by going to www.kathywhiteyoga. That's all one word. And it's Kathy with a K, White with an I, yoga. So kathywhiteyoga.com.
Wonderful. Are you on Instagram and Facebook?
Yeah, the usual places. I have an assistant who helps me with that. I'm not really a social media person, but she puts wonderful posts that go out.
I want to thank you for this great conversation.
I want to thank you for all your wonderful questions, your curiosity, and your enthusiasm for the subject. It's great to talk with you, Susan.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Now you can share your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.